you may have picked up that my voice is not as it should be, but it's already a lot better than it has been earlier this week. So I'm hoping that you will all be able to hear me throughout the sermon. I would like us to think this morning a bit about the balance between God's guidance and our own responsibility, and what it actually means when we say, what we often say, is that he has a plan for our lives. Now, over the years that I've been in this country, I've heard comments in relation to this, also in this church. And I just would like us to think about that a bit further, because I have the impression that there is a little bit of confusion around that. One of the first times, because it is not something that's said a lot in the Netherlands, just to give you that background. So for me, it was a bit new that people were talking about that quite often. One of the first things that I came across this was when I had a conversation with my manager about 12 years ago, who was a lady from Caribbean background and had a Christian background as well. And in the course of the conversation, which was related to some personal issues of mine, she said, "Everything happens for a reason." And I've later discovered that that said a lot among Black and Caribbean Christians. And I wonder, does it really? And if so, what does it really mean? Do people mean that God allows things to happen on purpose for a reason? Things like accidents or illness or difficult marriage relations, marriage breakup, wars. Clearly God allows these things to happen. They happen to us. But does he do it for a reason? And what would the reason be then? And then the next question is, does it actually mean that he actively organizes these things to happen? Because that goes further than allowing things. If he organizes these things, he actually and actively plans these things to happen, and potentially for a specific reason. And often the reason is, as people will say then, to teach us something. Another thing you hear a lot, and I've already referred to it among evangelical Christians, is that people will say God has a plan when something happens, something difficult or painful. And I've also heard it in this church, not necessarily from the pulpit, but I have heard people say it. X, Y, or Z may have happened, but God has a plan. And again, to me, that seems to imply that God lets these things happen in order to teach us something, maybe to bring us closer to him. But does he? And is it what the Bible teaches? So I'd like to look at that in a bit more detail. Now, there are loads of verses in the Bible that refer to that, so I've picked out a few, so I can't be exhaustive. Now, the phrase that God has a plan may well come from Jeremiah 29, verse 11, which says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." Just a brief recap. Steve actually preached about this passage a couple of weeks ago. The Israelites were in exile in Babylon as a punishment for their sins. And their sins were mainly related to worshipping idols and committing injustice. And then Jeremiah, who is in Jerusalem, sends them this letter in which God, through him, promises them a hopeful future despite their past sins. That is God's plan for them. Now, what is a plan? We all plan nowadays, at least to some extent. And some people are more of the planning type than others. I remember when I still lived in the Netherlands, one of my nieces might phone me on a Saturday morning and say, "Shall I come and visit you today?" But I had already made loads of plans, and often I had to turn her down. And it was only years later that I saw the value of her lifestyle, where people act more spontaneously. But we all plan. We plan at what time we have our lunch, our coffee. We plan to visit a friend or have a visitor. We plan to phone someone or send them a card. And other things are planned for us, like at what time we have to be at the doctor's or at the hospital, what time a church service starts. But as you all know, not everything goes to plan. Things happen that we didn't plan, like a power cut or a fall or an accident. These things may upset our plans. But there are also things that other people do to us that upset our plans. An unexpected visitor, an angry neighbor or relative at the door, a train strike. Now, when people quote Jeremiah 29, it often sounds to me that they believe that whatever happens to us, it is part of God's plan, good things and bad things. But that's not what he says. Jeremiah, rather the Lord, through Jeremiah, says that he plans hopeful things for the Israelites despite the bad things, in this case, the exile that have happened to them. And in their case, that happened through their own fault. We could say that God planned the exile, but that was a specific punishment for years and years of sinful behavior. I suggest we have to be careful to copy and paste something like that onto our lives in general, to every detail of our lives. I think we need to look at the context. And actually, a lot of other translations of that verse don't use the word plan. I've looked at some Dutch and German translations, and they speak of the thoughts God has about us, thoughts of peace and hope, not of harm and disaster. And actually, you can see the same in various other English translations. They speak of the thoughts God has about us. So it's not about a plan, it's about God's thoughts, or another word that's also been used is a purpose of restoring the Israelites to peace and prosperity. And there are good reasons that we can apply that verse to us as well, that that is God's general intention for us. So summarizing, the word plan in Jeremiah 29, if it is a correct translation, it appears to be more an intention, not a detailed plan. And it's a plan to reverse the bad situation the Israelites were in to something good, to bring them out of exile back to Israel. Now, that's quite different from the suggestion that God plans to both the good and the bad. God's plan is to give us a hope and a future. Now, just a few other verses that are quoted a lot. In Matthew 10, Jesus says somewhere, "Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall on the ground apart from the will of your Father." That's the NIV. And it also is phrased like that in other translations. And it seems to imply that even the death of a sparrow is planned by God, is his will. But if you look at the Greek original, it says, "Not one will fall without the Father." It doesn't say without the will of the Father. So I would suggest that it means the Father is there when it happens. But it doesn't necessarily say that what happens is his will. And if he is there when something fairly insignificant happens, like the death of a sparrow, no doubt he is there when bad things happen to us. He is there when good things and bad things happen to us. He shares our pain, our joy. He comforts us, helps us. But we can't conclude from this verse that whatever happens to us is his will. And we can ask the question, does he actually want bad things to happen to us? Let's look at the Psalm 139 that Nigel read to us. Verse 15 and 16 say, "My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." Now, the key word here is the word ordained, because again, that appears to say that God planned everything we go through beforehand. Even centuries in advance, he planned all that. Now, I don't know Hebrew, but I've compared a number of translations, and most of these say that our days were written in God's book. It doesn't say that they were ordained. And what I found is that one literal translation is, "On thy book, all of them were written." So I would suggest that, again, this verse appears to say that God knew about it long before we were born. He knows every day of our lives. He knows in advance what's going to happen. But I would like to suggest that that doesn't imply that God wants all these things to happen, or in the past wanted to happen. Now, I know there are verses in the Bible that seem to indicate that everything that happens in our lives comes from God. Isaiah 45, verse 7, I bring prosperity and create disaster. That's something that God says in a prophecy. But again, I would suggest we are careful to apply such a verse to our daily lives and to everything that happens in the world and make it a general statement. This was said in a specific context, in this case, a prophecy for King Cyrus of Persia. So I'm not saying that we can't learn from it, but I'm not sure if we can make this into a general statement, a general doctrine. And then to go back to where I started, if God plans every detail of our lives, where does that leave our own responsibility? If, say, Mick is driving somewhere and he decides not to take the A12 but the A14, who's responsible for that choice? Mick or God? I hope that we'll all agree that Mick is responsible, not God. Who's responsible for the sermon that I'm preaching right now? Is it God or me? I prepared it prayerfully, but these are my words. You will see my style in it. If Steve had spoken about this topic, or Richard, or someone else, they would not have done it differently. And what if our choices lead to problems for ourselves or others? Who's responsible? If God planned that to happen, is he then responsible for our choices? Happily, most Christians won't take it that far. But I'm pointing this out because I have heard people say that God plans every detail of our life, of every day. And then my question is, well, where does that leave our responsibility? If I decide to hit someone, who's responsible? If I decide to ignore a red traffic light and have an accident, who's responsible? Don't we have responsibility to make the right choices? And don't we have the freedom to make good choices or bad choices? And then are there not things that happen that are beyond our control? But for instance, if someone wants to harm us, who's responsible for that action? God or that person? What if we fall ill or literally have a fall or have an accident? There are things that happen to us where basically no one is responsible. And there could be logical explanations. And God clearly allowed it all to happen. But did he send the illness? Did he actively decide to give person X bad eyesight, person Y dementia, and so on and so forth? Is that what we believe? Is that what we mean when we say that God has a plan? I do believe that according to the Bible, God knows in advance what's going to happen because he is all-knowing. And that applies to what happens to us, that applies to what happens in the wider world. And sometimes he intervenes, and quite often he doesn't. But does he want these things to happen? Does he want evil to happen? Even more so, does he plan these things in order to teach us something, to bring us closer to him, as some Christians say? Is that what the Bible says? Just want to give you a few examples of things that happened in my life, or around me rather, when I was a teenager, when I was growing up in the Netherlands. At some point I read in a newspaper that a young person had died tragically in an accident. And the parents' comment was quoted in the newspaper. They appear to come from a strictly reformed church. And they basically said, this was God's will. The Lord has given, he has taken, praise the name of the Lord. But they accepted this as God's will for their child and for them. Around the same time, the 14-year-old daughter of a pastor of a reformed church, one of the reformed churches, suddenly died of meningitis. As it happened, her father wrote a weekly column in the regional church magazine. And soon after her death, he wrote about that, what happened to his daughter. And I will never forget the title of his column. He wrote, God didn't want this. So these are two entirely different interpretations of the death of a child. And, you know, you can agree either with the one or the other. And I guess you would think you would know, or I think you can guess which of the two I would choose. I don't think that God plans the difficulties in our lives. Apart from the fact that many of the things that happen to us are either our own fault or someone else's, He is love and He is good. God wants the best for us. And I'm not too sure that the Bible supports the idea that He plans difficulties for us. And we live in a broken world, which includes illness and accidents. These things happen. What is more important, though, is how we respond to what happens to us. Because do we get angry with God? Do we grow bitter with Him? Or do we go to Him with our grief and our questions, like Job? Do we take the space that the Bible gives us to lament? Do we ask Him what we can learn from the situation? Ask Him to help us to respond in a loving way, for instance, when someone makes our lives difficult? Do we ask Him to accept our situation when we are confronted with serious difficulties? Even harder, do we surrender to Him? Easier said than done, but we have a choice. And yes, then these things can draw us closer to Him if we respond in a faithful and humble way. I had hoped that we could have sung the hymn, "O Love That Will Not Let Me Go," today, but that's technically not possible. It was written by a man called George Patterson. He was a teenager when doctors told him he was going blind. He graduated from university in 1861. By the time he finished his studies, he was sightless. His fiancée returned his engagement ring with a note saying, "I cannot see my way clear to go through life bound by the chains of marriage to a blind man." Matheson adapted to his sightless world, but never quite recovered from his broken heart. Yet he became a powerful and poetic pastor. He led a full and inspiring life, turning to the unending love of God for comfort. And he wrote these words, "O love that will not let me go, I rest my weary soul in thee. I give thee back the life I owe, that in thine ocean depths its flow may richer, fuller be." Well, that's surrender, isn't it? That's quite impressive. But there is no mention in that hymn of anything at all that suggests that God wanted Matheson to go blind. But let his example be an inspiration to us how to respond to difficulties. "I rest my weary soul in thee." Because in the end, in all situations, all we can do is surrender to God, accept that X, Y, or Z has happened to us or is happening to us, and ask Him to help us deal with it in the right way. And as some of us know all too well, that's easier said than done. It can be a struggle, but it's not impossible. Sorry, I just need a drink of water. Well, this leads me to conclude that Psalm 139, verse 16 doesn't imply that God has literally ordained every day of our life, because that doesn't allow for our own free will and our responsibility over that of others. And it doesn't seem to tally up with His love and goodness. But, as we all know, it doesn't mean that God never actively intervenes in our lives. Just wanted to give you one example, which is actually something that Alan shared with us during one of our services sometime last year, I believe. He told us how he had drifted away from the Lord years ago. And I'm hoping I'm rephrasing this correctly, Alan. One day he had to run an errand somewhere just outside Colchester. And on his way back, he drove on a narrow country lane. And from the other direction, another car approached. And one of them had to make way for the other, because there wasn't enough space for their cars to pass, so they had to do something. And it turned out that the other driver was someone from the church Alan had left. And because they couldn't avoid each other, or rather because Alan couldn't avoid this other person, they got talking. And it was because of that meeting, that conversation, that Alan found his way back to the Lord. Now, from a human point of view, this was purely coincidence. But from a spiritual point of view, this was a God incident. God had arranged this to happen. So yes, God does intervene in our lives. So where does this leave us? If God doesn't plan our lives from A to Z, as we have seen, where does that leave us? We've seen that sometimes he intervenes actively, but he doesn't always. People have their own responsibilities. So when we or others make mistakes or bad choices, we have to face consequences. And as said, bad things happen to us. We live in a fallen world. So what's left? I've already touched on it, but I would say that the most important thing that is left, that is whatever happens, he is with us because he loves us. Think of Psalm 23. I don't need to quote that. I'm sure we all know that very well. And think of what Nigel read from Romans 8, verse 28. In all things, he works for the good of those who love him. It doesn't say that he orchestrates all these things. But it does say that if we love him, he can work everything that happens to us for the good. He can use it for his glory. Now, just one more example to finish with, to illustrate that verse. When I was a student at London Bible College in the 80s, at some point I had a two-week practice assignment at a Baptist church in East London. It was an estate predominantly lived in by Black and Bangladeshi people. My assignment started just before Easter, and I was staying with a lady who was a deaconess of the church. She lived above an elderly couple and their adult son, a man with learning difficulties. It was one of these old houses where you have a top floor and a first floor apartment. And on the Saturday before Easter, I had a day off and I went into London. When I came back late afternoon and arrived in the street, a boy came running up to me really excitedly. "There's a fire, there's a fire." Sadly, it turned out that the fire was at my landlady's downstairs neighbors. The heater had been too close to a blanket and a fire had started. And all three people in that house died because of smoke inhalation. The next day, Easter Sunday, the minister, Steve Brady, mentioned this sad incident at the beginning of the service. And paraphrasing Romans 8, verse 28, he said, "But we have a God who can turn bad things into good." So no, the Lord doesn't plan our lives from A to Z. He doesn't plan for things to happen in order to teach us something. But he knows what is going to happen, and he is there with us, whatever happens. We can turn to him with our joys, our sadness, our frustration, our pain. And in our responses, we have a choice to grow closer to him or to turn away from him. He is there to comfort us, to guide us. And if we let him, he can turn bad things into good. As we sang earlier this morning, we blossom and flourish as leaves on the tree and wither and perish, but naught changes thee. Thank you.